everyone. My name is Zane, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. Now, before I continue, I just want to say a couple of things. I did promise last Sunday that I would try to make a War Machine / Hordes episodes. However, I recently got into contact with something very contagious, and that is called final exams. For my winter class, of course. And after completing 2 final exams, I was mentally strained and I couldn't even remotely try to make the episode, let alone did some research on it, because my butt was on the books and honestly, school comes first before the podcast, that's all I have to say. But I would try to make the episode as soon as I can, it's just that next week is where I have classes again. Because now I have classes, and most importantly, I have work, so my hands are going to be tied about this. So I promise I will try to make the episode one of these days, but I'm going to have to sit on it for now. However, one thing I do want to talk about is card archetypes. Now, for those of you who don't know, or for those of you who never heard of this idea before, let me explain. Card archetypes are seen mainly heavily in like card games like, say, Yu-Gi-Oh! For example. And what an archetype is in my book is where it follows a specific name and it follows a specific card in general. Like, say, so-and-so man, the card, right? So-and-so man would be a card and he would have several different types of cards that would revolve around him. And depending on which game you play, or depending on which card other people's would play, it kind of depends on how those types of cards are seen as an archetype. For a couple examples, I want to point out some cards like, say, Buddy Fight, Card Fight Vanguard, Magic the Gathering, and the Digimon card game. I'll go through each of them just as quick, but I would like to make this into a series, talk about something else. So, the Magic the Gathering card game is pretty much like it follows a type, like merfolk, for example. If you summon a merfolk, then this merfolk has an ability of giving another merfolk on the field +1/+1. That's technically an archetype. For Buddy Fight, however, it's a different story because they have their own worlds, right? So, and not only that, they also feature, like, attributes, like their own attributes of a cards. So one could say like wild dragons, others could say neo dragons, like superheroes, mechas, and something else like that, right? Now they do sometimes follow their own names as well, or like a archetype specific name too. This could be set in stone with certain cards, like an archetype called Purgatory Knights. That's a good example. And that actually has its own way of playing. However, those types of cards I want to talk about is for another time and another date. Now, the reason why I chose Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards to start off is because, like, to be fair, there are a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards throughout the years. And not only that, there are sometimes ones that are, like, stinkers. There are ones that are god-tier good. And there are other cards that are just, I would say, questionable in general. However, sometimes when it comes to a card, it's actually kind of difficult to make a certain archetype better if you forgot about it throughout the years. So, what I want to do is talk about some of the worst cards that have been made in Yu-Gi-Oh!'s lifetime and talk about what we could do to make it better. Now, I'll go over some of these cards individually, and sometimes I would talk about them more in depth or what they had, but I would just try to make it in a way how we could make the card better. This idea came to me when I was talking to it about a friend not too long ago. So I was thinking to myself, hey, why not? I could try making my own cards, why not? So, let's do it. However, let's talk about, I'm going to be going over 3 different TCG real-life Yu-Gi-Oh cards and 2 fake anime card archetypes and see what we could do to make them better. And the first one I want to talk about is through Gate Guardian. Now, for those of you who don't know what Gate Guardian is, it is a level 12 warrior-type dark monster with 3,750 attack and 3,400 defense. And it has an effect? Not that good, because it cannot be normal or a special summoned unless by tributing its necessary monsters, Thunder, Kaizen, and Sujin. Monsters that are level 7 wind, water, and light monsters. Now, when I first saw this in the anime, the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime as a kid, I'm like thinking to myself, like, whoa, that's so cool! Because it's like a Power Ranger type of thing. They literally combined 3 different monsters into making one type of monster, like a Power Ranger-esque thing. And if you played Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links before, that's not like... And if you see the animation for it, that may not be not so far off of the spectrum, because it might as well be true. And let's talk about some of its support cards. Now, it has Sanga of the Thunder, Sujin, the Water, and Kaizen, the Wind Monster, right? And they are all spellcasters. They're all level 7s. They all share the same stats. However, they do also share the same effect, where it's like, if your opponent attacks a monster, quick effect, you could basically turn that monster's effect to 0, and you can make this card the attacking monster, right? And honestly, these cards have a far better effect than Gate Guardian, whereas you're trading in these 3 monsters for Beatstick. Now, here's the thing. The challenging part, trying to get Gate Guardian out on the field to begin with, was trying to get 3 cloggy level 7 monsters out on the field. Now, granted, yes, there are some other ways of making it 1 tribute instead of 2 tributes. I mean, sometimes a monster could be substituted for 2 tributes, then 1. Sometimes you could use like a spell to make them tribute them and summon them right away. Whereas other times, if you like found out about pendulums, you could basically summon them right away. And that was probably the best part about them in the first place. The pendulum summonings, not them, the monsters specifically. Although it kind of does not make sense why you would give up 3 monsters that have a far better effect for one that doesn't have a better effect. But they make it seem that it's like so powerful in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. So, here's my idea. Let's update all 4 of these monsters. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention. If you're not just trying to have... If you do have, like, say, Gate Guardian in hand, you're going to be searching for the rest of the other pieces. Or it could be, like, the other way around. Like, you have one of the other 3 pieces, and you're missing the other 2, and then you're missing Gate Guardian, and you need to search it out from the deck. And it's completely annoying sometimes, but let's talk about how we could improve it, starting with the main 3 monsters. When I was thinking to myself, these monsters should have an effect where they basically have the, I want to say the Cyber Dragon effect. Now, the Cyber Dragon effect is basically, if your opponent controls a monster, you could special summon it. That's the updated version of Cyber Dragon, and I feel as if it could work really well in today's meta. Because if you look at today's meta with certain cards like, say, Eldritch, Virtual World, and now Drytrons, and so on, I think it might be able to have a little bit more of a helping hand for this archetype. So all 3 of them, the updated versions of the Wind, Water, and Light Monster, should all have the Cyber Dragon effect, right? However, each of them should have their own unique individual effects. Like, say, the light one could be the monster special summoner that could special summon directly from the deck if it's been specialed or normal summoned. And the same could be said for, like, the wind one, except he could be, like, the monster reborn on legs or arm as legs. I honestly can't tell if he has legs for arms or arms for legs in his cart artwork sometimes, but that's... I'm getting off topic. But anyway, and the last one, the water one, could be the searcher for the entire deck, from monsters to spells. Now, we're not going to include Gate Guardian, because honestly, Gate Guardian deserves to be a extra deck monster, and that's what we're going to make him into. An extra deck monster that's able to be contact fused, right? So we're going to do that. We're going to make him into a contact fusion summon monster. But let's get into some of the spell and trap ideas. So like the first spell idea is that you could... This is going to be a drawback idea. So basically, if you want to special summon all three of the main monsters right out of the deck... Dick, what the fuck? I'm sorry, folks. But if you want to special summon all three of the main monsters you need to summon the new version of Gate Guardian out of your deck... out of your deck, you need to return three cards from your hand and shuffle your deck back into your hand. And then you can special summon them from your deck, but you cannot special summon monsters for the rest of this turn that are dark, wind, water, or light. Those are the only four that you can summon. However, the new version of Gate Guardian is going to be a light monster and not a dark monster. And he's still going to be a warrior though, but he's going to be contact fused. And for his ability, he should have an ability where if he's targeted by battle or card effect, you can automatically shuffle one material that you use to summon him or one monster in your graveyard back into the deck, and he remains on the field. I feel as if that is a best example or a better ability for him in today's meta, because it helps him stay on the field longer, and yet he could also pose like a threat. And for his offensive ability, what he should have is like more of an attack absorbing effect. And what I mean by that, like, he could probably half the monster's current attack that he's attacking, and he gains the half of that lost attack. That way he can be like a double threat, being that he could be able to stay longer in the field, and the fact that he could basically stay longer on the field and be more like an offensive / defensive card. So for the other spells and traps ideas, there should also be like a second and his last ability is if he is destroyed by battle or by card effect, or like if he's removed from the field by any means, he should be able to return all three of the cards from your deck. No, wait. That's for another idea. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm scrambling my brain here for no reason. So anyway, what I was trying to say is that basically, one idea that I did have was there should be like a more evil and more corrupt version of him. So basically, I remember in the GX era, there was basically another version of Gate Guardian where it was like a darker version called Dark Guardian or Darkness Guardian, I believe. And he basically was also a beatstick, but he cannot be destroyed by battle. And I feel as if what we could do is we could give them a spell card that basically lets them dump all three monsters from your deck or field or hand to special summon him. And unlike the other Gate Guardian that's a more defensive and offensive, this is like pure destruction, all in, like Raging Bull monster / beatstick, right? So he'll have an effect where if he... Once per turn, you could banish one monster from your graveyard to destroy one card your opponent controls, right? Now, it's a non-targeting card effect. So you could basically, like, destroy any card without targeting them, right? However, the idea could also be if he's been destroyed by battle or by card effect, you could return any number of cards that he banished up to number 3 and return them back to the deck. So that way you can still be able to return certain materials to your hand and reuse them. as of forever spells I thought of was, like, let's work with the gate idea. So, like, the grand gate field spell. All monsters that are light, wind, or water, or even dark or light, cannot... I said light already, didn't I? Yeah, I did. All monsters that are light, wind, water, or dark cannot have their effects negated. So basically, this is like your spell in case if like the original Gate Guardian monster idea had its effects destroyed and it was negated. So that way, you could be able to protect it without the need of worrying that it will be negated. So there's that. And the next spell idea, or at least a counter trap. The counter trap should be that if your opponent activates a monster or spell or trap effect, if you have a light, wind, or dark monster on your field, you can negate the effect and banish that monster or spell card. That way, you could have... However, the downside being, you have to return the monster or the... any monster that has that specific attribute, wind, water, light, or dark, back to the deck or the extra deck. Now, to be fair, banishing is kind of a powerful thing, and it kind of would make sense to, like, have that type of brick idea in it. It may seem unfair, yes, I do want to admit, but to be honest, I'm, like, thinking of the pros and the cons. Now, I was also thinking that this deck idea might be abused through the likes of, like, Elemental Lords and the likes of, True Kings, there we go, True Kings. So that way, for some of the other spells or other trap cards for the archetype, it could mainly focus on, like, level 7 or higher. Now that still won't work. I know what I came up with. I just can't remember what I did say, but I basically remembered that this idea would help a lot, or this entire deck in general, and make it, like, virtually even playable. Because, like I said in the beginning, it was kind of like an absolute hassle to even have this type of card from your field to your hand to anything else, and it would just be, like, absolutely annoying. If you're not worrying about just having all three pieces, you're worrying about getting your boss monster that took you, like, probably forever to summon, literally popped as if it was, like, a balloon. Now, I did have an idea where it was, like, oh, you could only use, or, like, you could target or have... or this card effect can only work if you have, like, a level 7 wind, water, or light monster on the field, graveyard, or hand. Ignore that toilet. That toilet is annoying. But anyway, I would feel if a lot of people read that, like, oh, level 7s? Wind, water, or light monsters? Oh, come on, dude. That's stupid. To be fair, I'm just, like, trying to think of, like, the pros and the cons to a point where they could, like, be their own rogue deck, but to a point where it's not, like, game-breaking. We don't want Dragon Rulers in a different way, right? Right. Oof. Oof. But anyway, let's get on to the next deck archetype idea, which is updating Cyberdarks. Now, Cyberdarks were a card archetype back in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX era, right? And from what I remember and know about them is they had, like, a really interesting effect idea where they're dark machine monsters, and if you have, like, say, a level 4 or lower dragon-type monster in your graveyard or in anyone's graveyard, you could automatically equip it to that Cyberdark, and they will gain attack value equal to that monster's original attack value. Was it cool? Yes. Did it sound interesting? Absolutely. Did it work out overall? No. Because back then, Cyberdarks only target level 3 or lower dragon-type monsters. Now, The idea of having a dragon mixed in with machines does sound kind of cool, but kind of doesn't feel like it blends in with one another sometimes. Like, the idea was there, but the execution wasn't. And it really didn't take them, like, until, like, the Legendary Duelist set with Joey Wheeler on it, until Cyberdarks finally got some better support, where that is involved with Cyberdark Cannon, Claw, and Cyberdark Inferno. Now, I'll go over some of their cards, but I just want to say this. Both Cyberdark Horn, Edge, and Keel have all the three same effects, where if you normal summon this card, you could target one level 3 or lower dragon monster in your graveyard, equip it to this card. But Horn could be able to do piercing damage, Keel could be able to do 300 points of burn damage, and Edge could be able to attack directly by having its attack points. Now, Cannon and Claw were kind of the necessities needed for them, whereas Cannon can be able to search for a Cyberdark, but when it's equipped and when that Cyberdark monster attacks, and if it's equipped, you can be able to Foolish Burial a monster from your deck to the graveyard. And if it's destroyed, you could draw a card. Claw, however, is more or less the spell searcher, where it's if you discard it, you could search for either any Cyberdark spell card, so Cyberdark Impact or Cyberdark Inferno. And if it attacks, you could be able to pitch a monster from your extra deck to the graveyard. But if it's destroyed, you could target a Cyberdark monster, either another cannon or any other necessity pieces that you need back into your hand. Now, these cards did kind of help, but in a way, the damage was already kind of done. Now, I will get into the spell cards quick. So, like, here's the thing. Cyberdark Impact was able to let you summon, was basically like their fusion spell in a way, where you were able to, like, reshuffle back into the deck a Cyberdark Claw, no, Cyberdark Edge, Horn, and Keel back into the deck to special summon Cyberdark Dragon, their boss monster. 1,000 attack, same idea. Target any high-level dragon in your graveyard and equip it. Far better than the others. I mean, you don't have to be restricted to a specific level, at least. But one thing is, like I said, like you had a hard time trying to get these pieces out, trying to get them to survive, and the damage was already done. However, their field spell kind of helped, whereas if you have a Cyberdark with an equipped monster to it, it cannot be targeted by card effects, so there's that. Not only that, you could also return a Cyberdark monster from your field to your hand, and gain an additional normal summon. That is also cool. And if it's been destroyed, you could search your deck for a polymerization or a card that says fusion in its name. Also good. Their second boss monster, Cyberdarkness Dragon, 2,000 attack. It has a quick effect to pitch its equipped monster to negate an effect. That is also good, but like I said, the damage was already done. They took too long and they didn't execute it so well that the damage was already there. Not only that, to be fair, like, the deck is like really slow because all their monsters are normal summons. Now, when I was thinking about it, I thought, oh, maybe Black Salvo could actually help the deck out a lot because he has an effect where if I could target a level 4 dark machine in my graveyard, I could be able to special summon it. But I was soon mistaken to find out when these cards have the effect of being normal summoned and not special summoned. So that is a big kick between the legs, my friends. And I did hear from one YouTuber that you could try to make the deck work with the introduction of Shadals. And Shadals do have an effect where if you pitch them into the graveyard, they have a different effect. However, there's honestly like a lot of issues with the deck in my opinion. There's a lot. And I feel as if they could have done it better in a different way. So how could we do it better? Now hear me out what I'm about to say. We can update all three of the monsters and we could make them have a link between their own archetype and the Cyber Dragon archetype. Now, here's the idea. All three of them, exact same effect, but different this time. They would say if this card is normal or special summoned. Now, one issue was that, yes, if you would attack into a Cyber Dark monster, it won't be destroyed, but the equipped monster would be destroyed. But not only that, they're still sitting ducks with 800 attack points. Furthermore, that they would also be really slow and are not that, like, spam-friendly to get the monsters out that they need. So here's an idea. The first Cyber Dark monster can have an effect where you could target... You could equip one monster from your deck, a level 5 or lower light machine or dragon monster from your deck and equip it to it. And it would have an effect where if this card is equipped with a light or a light monster or a dark dragon, you could tribute it, and if you do, special summon two extra Cyber Dark monsters from your deck. So there it is. You could be able to tribute the monster that is equipped to special summon two extra Cyber Dark monsters from your deck for free. Well, the free being that you need to tribute the equipped monster. Now, I do feel as if this can help with, like, the slowness and make them a little bit more faster. However, I can see that the issues would be that you would need to equip a Cyber Dragon or a level 5 Dark Dragon monster from your deck and equip it to that monster. No worries, ideas are away. The second monster idea could be that once per turn, if this card is equipped with a light machine or a dark dragon monster, you could be able to search your deck for a Cyber Dragon. No, you could be able to search your deck for any card that has Cyber Dragon in its name or Cyber, or you could search your deck for any Cyber Dark monster or card that mentions Cyber Dark in its name. So that would be like the main searcher. So if you have like a light machine monster equipped, you could search for any Cyber Dragon related card. Whereas if you have a Cyber Dark monster equipped, you could search your deck for any Cyber Dark mentioned card. Now, the idea of this, where it works with Cyber Dragons, it could also be worked with like a Chaos Engine, because Cyber Dragons are all light, except for Cyber Valley, I'm sure. But they're all light monsters, and Cyber Darks are all dark monsters. That way you can have a little bit of like a consistency with a Chaos Engine. Furthermore, if we go into the last monster idea, it could basically be the more aggressive card, where it's like, if this card is equipped with a light machine monster, destroy two back row cards your opponent controls. Or if it's equipped with a dark machine dragon or dark dragon monster, destroy two monsters your opponent controls. Like, that could be the more aggressive type of card instead of the other two, where one is like pretty much like a spammer and the other one is pretty much like the searcher. So it could be the more aggressive card out there. Now, for their spells and traps, or like an extra few monsters could be example, like the level 5 Dark Machine Dragon monster could also potentially be like its fusion spell in a way, like its own fusion. To be fair, the reason why I say that is because cards like Synchro Summoning and Ritual Summoning are slowly changing. So I feel as if Fusion Summoning and Exceed Summon should do the exact same thing. And this type of new Cyber Dark Dragon could be able to fix that issue. So you could use this level 5 Cyber Dark Dragon and have an effect where it's like, if you control one or two or more Cyber Dragons, you could fusion summon, if you have a Cyber Dark monster on your field, you could fusion summon one Dark Cyber Dragon, Dark Machine monster, including this card, and the other, and any other monster from your field or hand as fusion material. So that way, you could fusion summon into its new boss monster. Now, its new boss monster could be like more of a dark, corrupted version of Cyber Dragon. Like, it looks like it's going into an organic state, but yet it isn't. And it can have an effect where you could equip any number of cyber dragons or cyber dark dragon monsters from your graveyard or deck to this monster. And if it would be destroyed by battle or card effect, destroy the equipped monster instead. If your opponent tries to activate anything, send the equipped card back to the graveyard. Now, it may not seem like much, but it will have like a very higher attack point value originally than the other two, believe it or not. And as for the spells and traps, what I had an idea was, like, say, oh, this one spell card could have, like, a Pot of Greed. However, you need to shuffle any card that mentions Cyber Dark or Cyber Dragon in its name and shuffle it back into the deck first, then draw two. And another one could be like, if you control a Cyber Dragon, special summon a Cyber Dark monster from your deck. Or vice versa, if you control a Cyber Dark Dragon, special summon a Cyber Dragon from your deck. This way, it could be able to like convert both different cards and make them like equal in power and in strength overall. Now, Cyber Dragons are a powerful deck too, with the likes of, like, say, Cyber Dragon Dry, able to search for any spell card, their Link monster, their Fusion monsters overall, and you could actually have, and Cyber Dragon Infinity, definitely, and you could actually use it to a point where you could, like I said in the beginning with, use a Chaos Engine. Now, let's take a quick break here, and I'll get to the other ideas later on, okay, folks? See you after break. And we're back, folks. So, let's talk about something that is going to break Yu-Gi-Oh! Probably. Level monsters. And this level being Armed Dragon level 7 to 10. Now, I'm not going to talk about him, but let's talk about level monsters in general. The idea of level monsters was to slowly have your monster grow up and become stronger throughout the course of the battle. So, this kind of seemed fair, and it kind of makes sense to like emphasis on how Yugi Moto was like in the anime, how he was a scared little boy but then grew to be more braver than he originally was through the use of his monster silent magician and silent swordsman. And Konami thought it was a good idea to try to innovate other uses and other ideas of level monsters. So there's like level worm, there's like armed dragon being the case. Armed dragon got recently an update. I was actually thinking that he deserves a deck and deserves better, and when you know it, he did. However, there is another monster that I feel as if deserved another set of credit and more powerful cards than it initially had. Ladies and gentlemen, Horus the Black Flame Dragon. Now, Horus the Black Flame Dragon was pretty unique. It was a level 4 dragon-type monster with 1600 attack and 1000 attack, and he had a fire attribute. And the idea of Horus was supposed to be like a reference off of Ra, right? Whereas Ra represented light, Horus somehow represented darkness, despite in Egyptian folklore, he was like the good son from Osiris, but that's another time for another story. But he had different effects when he grew stronger. I remember in Duel Links when I first got him, he had the effect of if he successfully destroys a monster by battle, you could send it to the graveyard to special summon a Horus, the Black Flame Dragon, level 6 from your hand or deck. That is really strong and powerful, and I remember level 6 had an effect, if I'm not mistaken, that if you activated a spell card, I believe you can negate... No, that's level 8. Yeah, Horus the Black Flame Dragon was not affected by spell cards, him being level 6, that is. And when he got to level 8, Horus the Black Flame Dragon level 8, I believe he was able to negate any and every spell card and automatically destroy them. That actually is really good. Now, much like Armed Dragon, Horus actually saw different types of cards of him later on in the future. There was, like, a Dark Horus of him, and there was, like, another version where he was level 6 instead of level 8 called Metaphys Horus. Now, let's actually think of some ideas. Now, Horus being a level monster might see some issues, because level monsters are kind of, in a way, maybe kind of, sort of, their own archetype. It is kind of confusing, and I know, it really is. But what I mean by that is, they do have their own set of cards, and they do have, like, their own set of rules to them. This being that, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh yeah, that it was able to have certain conditions if those conditions are met. Like Horus's case, if it destroys a monster when it battles, it goes from level 4 into level 6. Simple, right? Right. Whereas like other version of Horus, Horus level 6 had an effect of if it still destroyed a monster this turn, it was able to special summon Horus level 8 from hand or deck. However, this idea could be different depending on what card you're using. I remember for Armed Dragon level 3, it had to survive on the field long enough during your next standby phase so it could turn from level 3 into level 5. But there's always ways around that, either through uses of like Wind Monster's effect or Masked Dragon's effect. But there was also like another card to cheat the system called Level Up. Now, Level Up was able to let you target one level monster you control, send it to the graveyard, and special summon the next level monster after it, ignoring its conditions. So say like I could, if I have like Armed Dragon level 7, and if I want to special summon Armed Dragon level 10, right? Now, Armed Dragon level 10 cannot be special summoned unless if I tribute level 7. However, with Level Up, I could basically tribute level 7 and then special summon level 10. That's how the way is, and that's how it was before the new set came out. Now, for this idea, let's try to make it into something different. Now, we are going to keep the level aspect, however. We're going to try to make it on its own archetype, because it did have a small-ish support card called the Servant of Horus, whereas Horus cannot be targeted if Servant is out. It's mediocre, I would say, because to be fair, you would have to normal summon Horus, you would have to get him to level 8, either through the means of level up or through battle. Then if you normal summoned him, he might just well be popped off right next after Horus. Depending, though. And there are other cards that we could try to do to make Horus a lot better than he initially is. So the first idea. Let's make him a Dark Dragon instead of a Fire Dragon. Because to be fair, Dark is a far stronger attributes out of every other ones in Yu-Gi-Oh! Furthermore, we could probably try to give him an idea where if you control Horus level 4, what you could be able to do is you could tribute him and I had something for this. I'm sorry, folks. I thought about the other two, but I couldn't think of this one for some reason. So what we could try to do is maybe for Horus, let's get rid of the level system, but instead make it into more of a standby evolution, where during once per turn, if you control a Horus, you could special summon Horus's Servant, a evolved version of him where he has a far better effect, so you could search for your deck for any Horus monster from level 4 to level 8. I know I said we should get rid of the level aspect, but hear me out. Thinking of cards like this is hard sometimes. So why don't we do that? Furthermore, what we could probably do is Horus level 6 or 8 could be special summoned by tributing up to the number of monsters or sending a type of monsters equal to the amount of its level. So Horus is going to be level 4. So basically, if you send two level 4s, you could special summon level 8 Horus right off the bat, maybe. And they could have their own negation effects. Level 4 could be able to negate monsters' effects. Level 6 could be able to negate traps and spells. Level 8 is able to negate anything when it wants by sending or banishing its lesser counterparts from your grave or hand. As of spells, one could probably be like a reincarnation spell, where if it's been banished or destroyed, you could bring it back from the graveyard, basically, right? And the next idea could potentially be a more, like, sage-like, another monster that supports Horus, like the Sage of Horus, maybe. Whereas, once per turn, you could shuffle your deck for a Horus card, and then special summon that card from your deck. It could either be a level 6 or a level 8, maybe. I had something for this. I completely messed it up, folks. I'm sorry. Whereas other cards could support it in some way. I mean, Konami did it so differently and so much better with Armed Dragon. I'm losing my mind over it sometimes. I had something for this, I'm telling you. But let's take a break from good old Horus for now and talk about two cards I really want to go over, which are two anime archetypes. Now, what's annoying is, to me in my books, that Konami would introduce so many different archetypes in its card game. However, they don't give it to us. Like, it's kind of stupid, and it's kind of like teasing, I would even say, that they would give us these types of cards and not actually hand them out via, like, packs or anything. I mean, they are kind of doing that now with likes of Duel Links, but it's still not enough. So, there are two different archetypes I want to talk about that came from the Vrain series. One of them being Motor Worms and Helix. Both used by the bad guys once, sadly, a couple of other times throughout other parts of its history, but never actually saw anything after that, which is what I would say a absolute downfall. Now let's start off with Motor Worms really quick, okay? So the one monster from the archetype we saw in the anime was Motor Worm Spread Queen. It's a Link 3 light insect monster with its arrows pointing to the left, the bottom left corner, and bottom. And it has 1,000 attack points. However, it gains 700 attack for each insect on the field, including itself. And you can actually have an effect off it, where if it's not pointed to a Motor Worm token, you could special summon that token to where it points to. Now, let me be blunt. Whereas, yes, there are different types of cards out there for insects that let you special summon multiple tokens to get this on the field, because you could use any insect for its summon. That's the good side. However, my issue with it being that it is a Link 3 monster that has 1,000 attack points. Why, may I ask? Konami, why is there a Link 3 with 1,000 attack points? Now, it does have other different effects, such as Egg Laying Bed, which is basically, and it says on Wikipedia here, if an insect monster is special summoned to your field, you can target one monster in your opponent's main monster zone. Change it to face up defense position, and if you do, it becomes an insect type. Also, it has its effects negated. When this card is face up on the field and that monster cannot change its battle position, when that monster leaves the field, destroy this card. Once per turn, you can release one insect monster to special summon up to two Motor Worm tokens. Now, tokens are pretty much the whole shabeel, I would say, for this deck. However, for a monster that gains 700 attack points for each insect monster, including itself on the field. But if I had to choose this monster between the queen insect, the original OG one, I would honestly say I would choose the OG one, because I at least know that it has more attack points, and it won't feel more embarrassing getting run over by it than a monster with only 1,000 plus 700, so 1,700. And for fair point, it, like I said, it's a link 3, so it's going to be hard, and it's going to be like, it's going to take you a lot of materials just to get into a link 3. However, let's actually go off that idea, the whole token aspect. So why don't we actually make three different monsters, three different insect normal monsters, and make them more corrupt-like, and have an effect where it resolves a token. Now we can potentially keep the link 3, however, here's the next idea. Why doesn't it also have three other forms, from it being a link 1, to a link 2, to a link 4? Now this is pretty much like another idea for like sun vines or sun veils with their monsters. So why can't we do the exact same idea? So why can't we do the exact same recipe with this? Like, you would have like the queen's egg or the queen's larva, and the next would become the queen teen or the queen pupa, then the queen, and then the ultra queen or whatever. I'm just coming up with ideas here. But like, here's the idea for like the main monsters. There's going to be three main deck insects for this archetype. They're going to be light. However, they're going to look like corrupted versions of already existing insect normal type monsters, right? So here's an idea. The first one could be your only normal summon monster, right? So it could have an effect of, when this card is normal summon, search for any motorworm monster spell or trap card from your deck and add it to your hand, or add any motor worm monster from your deck to your hand. So it's going to be our main searcher. However, it will also have an effect where if it's sent to the grave as a link material for an insect link monster, special summon one motor worm token. So, and the same is going to be said for like the other two monsters. They're going to have an effect where it resolves as a motor worm monster or a motor worm token. Furthermore, the second one could be like, if you control a motor worm queen, or if you have a motor worm token on the field, special summon this card from your hand. And if you do, special summon another motor worm token. And it could have an effect of, once per turn, if this card is special summoned, or if this card is normal summoned, you could tribute one motor worm token to special summon another motor worm monster from your grave or hand. So this card is also going to be that, like, reviver or summoner from the hand or deck. And it's going to be the only way how you could be able to get more, like, materials out on the field. And the last monster is going to be more of our defensive monster. Whereas I mentioned about Cyber Dragons, one of them would be, like, the offenses. This is going to be our more defensive card. So, like, if you... But it's going to have the exact same effect as the last one, where it's, if you control a motor worm token, special summon a nut... this card from your hand. And it could have an effect of, oh, as long as there is a motor worm token on the field, your opponent cannot target any other monster with card effects. So there's the protection. As of the link 1 monster, it can have an effect where, when this card is link summoned, special summon one token. And if this card has a token, you cannot attack into this card except for other monsters. So there's a small bit of protection there. And the link 2 could have a version of where it gets stronger, but yet it also gets more, like, harder to kill. Like, if this card has a token pointing to it, you could tribute it or tribute a motor worm monster to protect it from either by battle or by card effect. Link 3 is going to be, like, the same one, but going to have the crappy 1,000 attack and 700 gain, but it's also going to have the whole token aspect, whereas the last one is going to be your main boss monster of the deck, where you can special summon another token, like always, because that's the whole trend of this deck, right? It's going to be tokens. And anytime if your opponent tries to activate something, tribute, negate. Tribute, negate. Tribute, negate. Either a token or a motor worm monster. Now, for some spells, we do gotta put like a bit of stops on it because there's this one called Motor Worm Bait. If you control an insect, special summon 2 motor worm monsters. Cannot normal summon or special summon level 3 or 4 monsters the turn you activate this card. No, that's actually pretty disgusting because you get special summon that many tokens. But that's what the whole focus is going to be on. You cannot like use other tokens. It has to be insect tokens. So there's a little bit of like a limitation there because I heard about the Golem card, Grinder Golem. We don't want that to happen again now, do we? But if we continue on, there is something else I do want to say about this idea of a deck where it's like, to be fair, I heard Battle Wasp were once a pretty terrible deck. However, if we could be able to like do this same similar idea in its own way, it might be its own deck overall. Now, to be fair, insects or like some cards that relate to insects could be more of an engine and not of a deck. But the way how I was reading and playing Battle Wasp, I could say differently. So let's do the exact same thing with Motor Worms, shall we? Now, there is one more archetype I do want to talk about before I end today. And this archetype is known as the Helix archetype. Now, interestingly enough, it has 2 monsters. Record-breaking, I know. It has 2 main deck monsters, 2 link monsters, and a few spells and traps. And the idea is, like, cross... what's the word I'm looking for? Like, DNA splicing, gene splicing, and combining things like that. And sadly, it didn't work out so well in the anime. Like, it has 2 monsters. One sec, where are they? Here they are. One named Dreadrat and Mormatrol. Now, Mormatrol is kind of a questionable one because it is a... They're all fiends and they're all dark attributes, right? But Mormatrol is a level 5 fiend monster with this effect. Okay, are you ready for this? Get ready. It says, if there are no monsters on the field, you could normal summon this card without tributing by sending 1 Helix card from your hand to the graveyard. The first time you would take battle damage involving this card each turn, you do not. Now, the battle damage I kind of see, because if you read like the Link Monsters effects, they try to have like a whole Yubel Shabeel there, but like the idea of not normal summoning it by tributing it, by just pitching a monster from hand is kind of like, I would say, questionable, because why not special summon it? I mean, I just said, like, the next printed version cards of Cyber Dragons, you could special summon it if your opponent controls a monster. Brankatops could special summon itself if it controls no if your opponent controls more monsters than you do, and that's pretty... And that broke the game for a bit. However, this card, I could say, is quite questionable, because it has an effect that I feel you would rarely use, but yet was done pretty poorly. Now, as of their next monster, Dreadrat, is kind of worse. Level 5, Dark Fiend. Where are the other monsters, you may say? If you control a Link monster in the extra monster zone, you could normal summon this card without tributing. If this card is in your graveyard, you could special summon this card, but banish it when it leaves the field. You can only use this effect of Helix Dreadrat once per turn. You cannot normal summon or set the turn you activate this effect. Then why would I bother then? To be fair, when it comes to normal summoning, you only have 1 normal summon, but you can special summon a crap number of times. So, if I'm going to use different cards that are level 5 monsters, I tend to use good ones. Like a Dawnwalker. Discard 1 card, special summon him, special summon Nascator, Duskwalker. Discard 1 card, special summon her, special summon 1 Supe. Why not? Or Cyber Dragon. Why not Cyber Dragon? That's a better card. Whereas their Link monsters, Helix Helix, what's it called? Helix got the clone, and Helix, Necro Darwin are the only two Link monsters we see in the game. Now, they have pretty interesting effects, and I think we could actually try to go into it. Now, Gothic Clone has that effect where it has two Link 2s, one pointing up and one pointing down, and it has zero attack. It's a Fiend Dark attribute monster, and it has this interesting effect where it says, at the start of the damage step, if this card is battles an opponent's monster, this card's attack becomes equal to the attacking monster on the opponent's field until the end of this turn. The first time this card would be destroyed by battle, each turn, it is not destroyed. If this effect is applied after damage calculation, you contribute one monster this card points to inflict damage to your opponent equal to the tribute monster's attack. Can you see where the whole U-Bell idea is coming from? Whereas Necro Darwin has an effect where he is a Link 2, arrows pointing up and to the right corner, middle. Your opponent's monsters cannot target this co-linked card for attacks. If this card is in your graveyard, you can special summon this card to a Link monster it points to. Whenever your opponent activates a spell card that would inflict damage to you, quick effect. You can make that damage to zero, then this card's attack becomes double its original attack until the end of this turn. Now, I don't see once per turn, so this card or these cards could potentially be dangerous. However, the main issue is that the monsters to use them, you both need Helix monsters to go into these guys, are both level 5s. Now, when it comes to a different type of card, you would think, why would Konami do this, or like use this card in general, or make this card without giving it some kind of like backup or like some kind of way of being remotely used, right? Right. Furthermore, I can't remember what their spells or trapped cards are, but let's actually try to figure out what we could do by using this idea that is a U-Bell Link engine. So one thing was, it seemed that it tried to heavily co-depend on co-links. However, cards like, say, Appliancers or the Nightmare archetype, I could argue, do it way better than this archetype does. And the issue is, they have not that many good monsters. And I bet you that their spells are not that great to look at or great to use either. So let's try to use it in some way that we could be able to remotely have a somewhat decent co-linked U-Bell Link effect cards, okay? So I had an idea for the monster, the Link 2 monster. What we could probably be able to do is what we could have an effect where if this card is co-linked, your opponent must attack into this card all the time. And it cannot be destroyed by battle if it's co-linked, right? So that would be one interesting effect. So that way, your opponent has to attack into it all the time. Either if it's by like the weakest monster, like say a Karibo, or by their most strongest monster, like Boral Sword Dragon. So there's that. Furthermore, if it would, every time when the battle phase ends or after it's done attacking, you could use its effect to tribute a monster it points to and inflict damage to your opponent times that monster's attack. Simple. Whereas for the other monster, what we could probably do is we could have an effect where it's basically like a monster reborn on itself, where if it would be, instead of being tributed, or no, yes, we're still going to tribute it, but every time you would be attacked, or every time the monster is attacked, it gains half of its attack points. And that way, when it's been tributed, you're going to get burned for a lot of damage. Now,
It might get nerfed. Yes, I will admit that. But we're trying to make good archetypes here, or make them better than they already need to be. Whereas for monsters, like Dreadrat looks like a level 4 and deserves to be a level 4. And Gnome Troll needs to have a better effect, honestly. But, and as for other monsters, it could also have like an effect where they could potentially do the exact same thing. Like do burn and more burn, or like destroy your opponent's field. Now, Dreadrat, I can honestly see him being more of the searcher engine of the card with the Monster Reborn effect. Whereas for Gnome Troll, I honestly do think that he does deserve to be a type of Cyber Dragon, but without the need of it, him be normal summoned, let alone him having you to send a monster from your hand to the graveyard. As if for their traps, they should be in a way where they could help, like say, oh, if you have a Link monster in your graveyard, or if you have a Link Helix monster in your graveyard, special summon it to a Link monster where it points to. Furthermore, it could potentially have like different protection effects for other spells that this archetype could have. Or like, one card could be like, once per turn, if a Helix monster is destroyed, you could return it to the bottom of your deck. Or like, once per turn, if you would be destroyed by card effect, or if a monster would be banished, return it to the deck. So there's a little bit of like recycling there, and a little bit of like something that could stand up to the meta at least. It might be disgusting, but hey, again, the meta. Furthermore, what we could probably do for the deck is give it some extra monsters here and there. Some monsters that could actually be able to special summon others of itself from the hand or deck, or probably be the monster born, and others that could potentially help, like, blow up the back row. Because this deck did have a good idea, but much like Cyber Dragons, or Cyber Dark Dragons, I mean, it didn't really have a overall good output when you look at it and compare it to other good cards of today. And that's the episode, folks. Now, before I continue, I just want to say you can listen to this podcast on things like Spotify, the Anchor app, Apple Podcasts, or Overcast if you want. If you know anyone that could or is interested in some of the stuff I talk about, tell them to come right on down. Now, I did mention, another thing I want to mention is I did mention the Digimon card game. But as of recording, I did find out that the Digimon card game was not even released yet in America. In some places it has, due to early card shops. Furthermore, like, it was out longer than in America than it was in... No, it was out longer in Japan than it was in America. And lastly, there are some small cards, like a Tyrannomon deck, so you could basically say that there is kind of like a archetype-ish aspect to it. Same with like a Diabramon or Darubamon. I can't remember what his name was, but I know who I'm talking about. So, but like, it does feature like the color system idea that Magic the Gathering does. So like purple, black, blue, yellow, green, and then red. But comparing this card game to others is like little bit of data that I'm working with. So I do want to say that really quick before I end. And lastly, if you guys are so nice enough to listen to some of the other podcast episodes, we could make this podcast so much more with small revenues here and there. And we could help flush that toilet, pay for college textbooks, or help to keep the lights on and make this a far better podcast than it needs to be. Thank you and have a good night. And remember, folks, geek is freak.